You know how moms have the best stories, but we never really save them. This Mother's Day, I tried something really special. It's called Telmel.ai. They call your mom, ask a few thoughtful questions, and she just shares her life, fun memories, little moments, and all of it. I tried it out, and honestly, it was such a fun and magical experience. At first, I wasn't sure what to expect. But Mel makes it super easy and warm. And the final keepsake? So beautiful. There is even a Mother's Day promo. Just check out the code on telmel.ai. Seriously, give it a shot. Namaste and welcome back to another episode of The Sapient. I hope everybody is doing good. Everybody is having a good day. If not, I guess you're about to have a good day because today Andre is on the podcast and he wants to talk about a lot of stuff that is pretty important, I would say. Right, Andre? So how are you doing today and what's up?
Yeah, this is like a fascination that I've devoted my entire life to is relationships and understanding human psychology, communication, how humans connect with one another, how we use language to try and convey meaning about some things that are so deep and abstract that we can't really, and then all the miscommunication that happens, all the conflict that happens, and like all that stuff, it fascinates me. And it fascinates me how oftentimes something so simple as just lack of accuracy with the words that we use will then unravel into like ending marriages or just creating a lot of tension issues in relationships. And that, of course, will affect us as individuals, as professionals in our day-to-day lives, in our professional lives, and of course, with our familial lives.
Right. Because what you just said, right, like that could be a podcast on itself, right? Like, because If you have devoted your life to it, I'm pretty sure you know a lot of stuff that people wouldn't understand, right? So how would you approach this topic? What would you say is like the essence of it, right?
If I was to break this down, make it as simple as possible, I think or at least this was what helped me. I hope it will help someone. But what really helped me was understanding that relationships and communication, it follows formulas, it follows engineering principles, it follows the laws of physics, and being able to then understand things in these more concrete, specific terminology, it takes away the abstract that is typically associated with psychology, and that allows us to be able to feel more in control of, yeah, you can rebuild your relationship. Yes, you can reconnect with someone. Yes, you can influence someone to feel a particular way, even if that's not how they feel currently. So being able to synthesize the abstract into concrete and being able to like make a formula out of stuff, I think that's one of the most important things that I've learned. And that's what's allowed me to do the work that I do today. It's to have the results with our clients that we do today, which, it always blows people's minds that we're able to, for instance, like save a marriage without the other person participating in it. But the way that it works, it's not magic. It sounds like it is, but it's not magic. It's just we understand the science of these are the variables, solve for X. And that's all we do. That's all that we really need to do. And understanding that there are variables and understanding what these variables are, being able to put to turn the abstract of a complex, messy, confusing relationship into something that is solvable, I think that's the biggest, most important thing. Create a solvable problem.
So let me ask you this, right? Because I feel like you brought logic into a thing which was not supposed to be logical, right?
Supposed to be. Interesting choice of words.
Right? Because it's like you did the math kind of conversation when you say when you're talking it does sound like it's more of a structural engineering than just chaos, right?
Yes.
So how did you come into this, right? Like, what was your initial push or pull, right? That you decided, okay, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. I know it doesn't come apparent because I'm very practiced in the way that I show up and speak and communicate, but I'm on the spectrum. I'm autistic. So I was not very proficient with communication, with understanding people, with relationships. I sucked. I flat out sucked. I was the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the process of failure, in the process of rejection, it was, for one, it was hurtful, but it created this hunger in me, this sort of like this, I will be vindicated. I will crack this problem. I will win, sort of. And I then took the obsessiveness of my autism and I just channeled that into, okay, let me figure stuff out. Like, how does relationships and psychology and communication, like, how does this all of this work? So that's what I devoted myself to doing. But now I had a problem. I don't understand, like, facial cues, social cues. I didn't understand those. It wasn't intuitive to me. So what can I do instead? What can I focus on instead to learn all of these other things that I feel this handicap on? So I devoted myself to math instead and engineering and creating a solvable problem, turning the abstract into something concrete that I could study, that I could apply these engineering principles to, so that I could then be able to craft. So, okay, so this is the optimal response. This is how I can get this kind of response out of this situation. And I went so deep, so obsessed. I was so ridiculously nuts with it that for the first, like, maybe 11, 12 years or so, I would go out to meet people. And by the way, I'm a super introvert. I hate socializing. I love people. I hate meeting people.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Same. It's same here. Yeah. I would say the feeling is mutual.
Yeah. I mean, I would force myself to meet people to essentially study them. I thought of myself as kind of like a Jane Goodall situation. Like, I'm an anthropologist studying the apes in their natural habitat. That sounded so much better in my head. But like, I would devote myself to this study so obsessively that kind of paradoxically, it cost me a lot of relationships because I wasn't in it for the relationships anymore. I was in it for the thirst of learning relationships. So that was like a balancing act in and of itself. And then eventually being able to understand how this dynamic works and how relationships and like all of the parameters work, then I was able to start building my own relationships. Very, very happy in my relationship right now. Happiest relationship I know that exists is mine, so I'm super proud about that. And it's down to this. It's down to understanding. Hold on, can we just pause? I'm going to have to take my puppy out because she's just insane.
Not a problem.
Here.
Not a problem.
Right out of the gate.
I feel like that's the best thing, right? Because it's like, you know, dogs are like, you know, like, you better give me attention, right?
Yeah, it was hard trying to, like, I was pushing her away and trying to talk and I didn't want to.
Yep.
Yeah, man, it was not my proudest moment.
That's okay. So, you said that, just studying people caused a lot of relationships, right? So do you think you operated from a third person's perspective in those situations, at least initially, where you were like, I'm just going to observe the situation and learn from it rather than react or actively participate in it?
Oh, for sure. And what's really interesting is it taught me something. I did not anticipate this as a lesson at all, but it taught me the value of every once in a while, for some things, it's really important to take a third-person perspective approach.
Yep.
And that was, I did not see that lesson coming. But that was really, really useful because when we have conflict, for instance, you know, your wife is upset about something and she's going at you, and she's going for the throat. She's she knows your insecurities. She knows
yep.
your vulnerabilities. She's weaponizing those. She doesn't care. She's just attacking your manhood, your manhood. And she's you have daddy issues. She's like, you're just like your dad. It's like, whatever your insecurities, she
yep.
knows that. She's weaponizing them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not able to take a step back
yeah.
and observe the situation from
uh-huh.
what is happening,
yep,
you
exactly.
get so caught up in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at that point, pardon my French, you're her bitch. Like,
yes. Yeah. Because I think the person just took it personally.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And the moment you do, you're no longer logical. You're no longer
yep.
objective. So you
mm-hmm.
can't see what's happening. You think you do, but
yeah.
you're not. You're seeing your
yeah.
emotions. You're seeing red.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not seeing what's happening.
Yeah, because at that moment, it's a fight or flight, right? Like,
yeah.
Do I respond or do I just flee? And most people don't want to flee. They want to, because I think they have good intentions. Like, they're like, I need to work on this, right? But they take it so personally that it becomes kind of, you know, dog fight, as you said, right? It's like, I'm going to hurt you as much as possible.
Yeah.
Right.
The fight or flight, for instance, like, that's the perfect analogy for this, because it literally is our limbic system, the part of our
mm-hmm.
brain that runs the fight or flight response. That's the part of the brain that gets activated in these situations. When we are in the moment, we are just experiencing
mm-hmm.
the emotions of, you know, my spouse is attacking me, our limbic system gets triggered. Now, automatically, the limbic system, by the way, it's like, it's a defense mechanism. It's supposed to protect you from danger. First and foremost, your spouse pointing out your insecurities, calling you, like, blaming you for something, calling you names, like, whatever the thing is that you think is really,
mm-hmm.
really bad, your life is not at risk. You are not
yep.
going to die from this.
Yes.
You just think you are.
Yeah.
So your brain's going to react the same way that it would if
mm-hmm.
you were out in the woods and a tiger came out from behind a tree.
Yep.
So your limbic system is going to first and foremost inject a shit ton of adrenaline and cortisol into your bloodstream. You are
mm-hmm.
going to get very, very hyper.
Yep.
You are going to become very, very reactive.
Yeah.
Second thing it does is it is going to force blood out of unnecessary organs like your digestion or, you know, your brain. And it's going to push that into the limbs that are going to allow you to survive the situation. Specifically,
yeah. I just like how you suggest that brain is a useless part.
That was obviously a joke.
Yes, yes, of course. No, unfortunately, it's true for most people.
the situation of, you know, here's a tiger. Yeah, your brain is kind of useless. Like, what are you going
yeah.
to do? Like, quiz it?
Yes.
But in a situation like an argument with your spouse, it kind of matters. So this
yep.
is like the big problem is when we go into a limbic system response, you know,
mm.
you are caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
Your IQ is going to drop by about 12 points.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain just
so for
lost
some people
all of
it's like
it.
Zero.
if their mean IQ is 12, then I imagine.
Yeah. So I guess what you're saying is that I read it somewhere, of course, because I'm not that intelligent. Because I'm one of those inner 12 IQ people. Because one of the psychologists said that our brain doesn't know the differentiation between visualization of threat and the actual threat.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Imagine.
So I guess what you're trying to say is, you know, when we get into fights, right? When you know, we get into these tricky situations,
yes.
our brains or our, you know, our psychological personality doesn't know how to differ those, right?
Exactly. If you think of, like, imagine, you know, back in caveman periods, you're out in the middle of the forest, you're alone, and you hear a branch breaking behind you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
Yep.
You have to have a physiological response to prepare
mm-hmm.
you for a threat, but
correct.
There is no threat yet. There's just
mm-hmm.
the possibility of one. You are
yep.
imagining there's a tiger right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it's a bunny. But you don't know that until you turn around and see that, oh, it's a bunny.
Yep.
And your body has to respond as though every single time that there is the possibility of a threat, your body has to respond as though there is the reality of one. Because
mm-hmm.
that's the best way to ensure your survival.
Yep.
So with an argument,
mm-hmm.
it's not a threat,
mm-hmm.
but it does trigger the possibility of a threat.
Correct.
Your body
mm-hmm.
responds in the exact same way that it does, if, as if your life was really in danger.
Mm-hmm.
If you are home alone at 3 a.m., you just watched a horror movie because why not for mood, and then you hear the floorboards creaking in the other room.
Home alone. Right.
You pick
like,
up your baseball bat.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Like you prepare for the worst, even though it might not be the worst.
It could be your cat.
Yeah.
It could be, it's just the temperature shifts and it
mm-hmm.
is
or it could literally be your imagination.
It
right?
could literally just be your imagination. It could be the neighbor next door and you heard it because it's 3 a.m. and there's absolutely
yeah.
no sound, so you can hear like for miles.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't matter because that's the rationalization that you'll only get to later. Your
mm-hmm.
physiological limbic response needs to happen now.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are in a situation like conflict, like you know, an argument with our spouse, in which we do that, it then works as a loop. If you say something mean to me, I take it personally. I
yep.
have a limbic response. What
mm-hmm.
am I going to do? My body language is all
mm-hmm.
of it is going to shift. My tonality is going to shift. I'm going to sound more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
What are you
yeah.
going to perceive? There could be a threat here.
Yep.
And so now we are playing ping pong with our emotions and we are
yeah.
sending this tension back and forth between one another.
Mm-hmm. And
all
of it is just based on fear.
And it's
right?
just fear.
Yeah.
It's not an actual threat. It's just the
uh-huh.
possibility of one, which is ultimately
yep.
what fear is. I could be in danger. When
yeah.
when can you be in danger? Like there's no situation in which you are not in the possibility of danger.
Yeah.
That's why fear sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, we have been speaking for some time, right? And just now, just like the 12 IQ person, I realized we, you know, we have not yet discussed what you do. For, you know, like, right?
No, we
just
have not.
Jumped into the topic. So can you introduce yourself and, you know, let my people know what you do?
Absolutely. My name is Andre Santos. I am a marriage coach and I specialize in cases where the spouse does not want to work on things. So what we do is we help people to save their marriage alone. And usually we get all the gnarly cases, no matter how many times we say this, like if things are starting to go awry, then maybe reach out, you know, nip it in
mm-hmm.
the bud before it gets too hot. People never do that. So we almost exclusively only have the worst cases. Because when people are still, there's still the possibility of reconciliation. They go to marriage
uh-huh.
counselors, they go to whatever. It's only when, like, it's completely over. Everything's up in smoke. There is nothing to
yep.
be done. They said that they hate me. They want to divorce me. They don't love me anymore. They're having an affair. And it turns out that they've been having 3 affairs for 2 years. And they might be narcissists. And they're having a midlife crisis. And also, they never, ever loved me. They were just pretending that they did. At that point, that's when people reach out to me. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So the whole understanding psychology and making it like concrete things, not just abstract, helps
mm-hmm.
with this. Because when people are in the abstract, they
yeah.
have no clarity. They have no understanding of like what is actually happening. They just have the possibility of threat.
Mm-hmm.
No clarity on how to solve it. So they feel powerless. A lot of potential for a threat. So they get
mm-hmm.
very fearful. And now because of like this connection between like there's no clarity on what the thing is that is actually happening, the thing that is
mm-hmm.
actually going wrong, and the things that I can do to correct it,
mm-hmm.
major confusion, major anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And then the danger of the situation, the threat that
mm-hmm.
this poses and what this can actually do puts people in a very negative, depressive, fearful state. And so
mm-hmm.
when these two states start ping-ponging back and forth,
mm-hmm.
it gets really, really dark for people. And that's where we step in.
So people essentially come to you when it's like there is no point of return.
Pretty much.
Right? And
yes.
they try to find a point of return. And
yeah.
by the way, you know, looking at your conference, I am pretty sure you are providing them with that one last option, right?
Say again?
Like looking at your confidence, right, with your profession. I would say you are providing them that last option, even when they don't see options left.
Yeah. Some people, they come to us because we're the last option. Some people, they come to us because they have no more options and they don't think that this is going to work. And they are just, they're just desperate that they're willing to try anything, but they don't believe that anything's going to work anymore because, you know, the spouse said, there's nothing you can do. Well, they said, there's nothing I can do. So there's nothing. No, that's baloney.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they don't know why they're feeling what they're feeling. They don't know like what's happening. They don't have the clarity on the concrete.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, they come in already thinking that there is no other way, that there is no solution.
Mm-hmm.
And then to be a little bit, to be honest, but also to be a little bit, you know, it's a little bit vindication for me. Those are the clients that give me the most pleasure when they win. When they get their marriage back, when they get their family put together, those are the ones that make me feel the best because I get the vindication of, oh, didn't you say it was impossible?
It's
a little extra pleasurable for me, I'm not going to lie.
I think you are trying to find positives in absolute positives, right? Like, most often, right, do you think that most of the problems in a relationship comes from breakdown of communication?
I would say there's three main problems in like that will contribute to, and they're fairly equal in like the percentage. One of those for sure will be the not being good communicators, and the overwhelming majority of people who are in relationships are terrible communicators. This is just my experience, my observation. It's not easy. It's not intuitive.
That's
right.
Yeah.
In fact, I will go a step further and I will say, if you think that you are a good communicator, chances are you're a bad one.
Yeah.
Because when we think that we are good ones, we start moralizing. We start judging the other person because they're not communicating right.
Yep.
How much of a good communicator are you if you can't get them to communicate with you? So that will for sure be one of the biggest problems, is people misunderstanding what is being said or not being able to convey their meaning very clearly. That's for sure one of the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, we do not understand our spouse at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we think we do. Oh, I've lived with this person for 25 years. Like, yeah. But for instance, you can very clearly, you can tell me how you see your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me how your spouse sees themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me, like, what is their biggest fear?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's snakes. No, that's the fear they tell you.
Yeah.
Which, by definition, is not going to be the biggest one. The biggest one is the one that they're so scared of that they're scared of talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of data. There's a lot of information that is really important because it drives all behavior and it drives all of the needs that people will look for in the relationship, the insecurities that will then sabotage the relationship. The information that matters most is the one that is not talked about, accessible in the relationship. And so you may, you've been with your spouse for 25 years. You know where they went to school. You know their favorite dish. You know their favorite color. You know their PIN number. You know their passwords. You know everything. You know every porn subscription they have. You're just that intimate.
Mm-hmm.
You still do not know what their biggest fear is. You do not know what their biggest insecurity is. You do not know what their most prized need is. You don't know what their biggest addiction is. Because people tend to think of addiction as like smoking, alcohol,
usually a negative.
Gambling. Yeah.
Yep.
But for instance, a lot of people are addicted to recognition. A lot of people are addicted to just feeling needed. A lot of people are addicted to secrets, knowing what they're not supposed to know. Like, there's a lot of these things that people are going to, like, their behavior is going to be entirely driven by these things. And these are the things we don't know about them. You could write their biography, but you can't write, like, you can write everything you know about their past, their present. But if you can't tell me about their future, then you don't know them that well. The third one is people don't understand themselves. And this one's kind of painful. It was painful for me.
Yeah.
I was like, of course I know myself. And I just did 6 months of a mindfulness course. Yeah, I know myself.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out,
we don't.
Your brain keeps a lot of stuff from you.
Yep.
And
I mean, it's for better, right? It's at least to protect you from stuff.
There's a lot of things it is to protect us, and a lot of things is just there's so much data, there's so much information that it's just not feasible
mm-hmm.
for you to have access to all of that data. Like, you need to operate in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, you go shopping, and if you're used to buying ketchup, then you're going to buy a specific brand of ketchup, and it's usually going to be the exact same one that you bought before. Why? Because your brain is taking shortcuts. How is your brain making that decision?
Yeah.
You don't know. You think you
yeah.
do, because if I ask you, oh, it's because it has these ingredients. It's because it's this price. It's because, like,
mm-hmm.
sure, you know, that's how you rationalize it. But why did this one call your attention before that one? Why did
so
you
you're
compare
trying
price
to say
between
that
these two?
Our brains are taking the least path of resistance.
Yes.
You know, on a day-to-day basis, right?
Yes. Like, all of our behavior is ultimately that path of least resistance. But
yeah.
what is the resistances that we are running away from that we are avoiding?
Mm-hmm.
Because, for instance, I don't know about you, but I don't like arguing. I don't like conflict.
Yeah,
so,
I don't think anybody likes it, apart from other probably leaders. Nobody likes it.
But if that's the case, then why do we do it? If we want to avoid, like if we want the path of least resistance, then we would want to avoid conflict. Then why do we do that? It's
yeah.
because there is something else. The alternative would have been much bigger resistance, that we prefer the conflict that we don't like, but we prefer
yeah.
that over, for instance, looking at our insecurities,
mm-hmm.
over admitting that we feel powerless in this thing, that we are scared that we're going to lose them, that we are scared of this, this, or that. It's easier to pick
mm-hmm.
a fight than it is to confront
yeah.
that.
Correct.
So we are not aware of what these things are that we are avoiding ourselves, and because of that, our behavior is running on autopilot. We are not in control. We think we are because we rationalize after the fact. Oh no, I did that because, and we will have a laundry list. But if
so
that's the
case.
So
do you think that's like our brain providing justifications for its actions rather than actually, you know, like making, as you said, sound decisions?
We don't really do a lot of making decisions. We think we do, but
yeah.
most decisions, or to clarify what I mean, we don't make a lot of conscious decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the decisions that we make are unconscious, and then we rationalize after the fact why we made them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
But for instance, we can put electrodes in your brain, and we can ask you, raise one of your arms, whichever one
mm-hmm.
you want, you know, just raise that one.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be able, like I would be able to, looking at the monitor, I would be
mm-hmm.
able to predict which arm you are going to raise by
mm-hmm.
upwards of 10 seconds sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. Like by the time that you make the decision, it is very
yep.
late.
Mm-hmm.
It already happened unconsciously to you.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain's already made the decision. It's going to be my left arm.
Mm-hmm.
And only then do you, oh yeah, here it is, my left arm. So the way in which we make decisions, it's very rare that we make an actual thought out conscious decision throughout our day.
Mm-hmm.
We do. We for sure have those moments, but it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
And so what then tends to happen is we wouldn't want to admit that to ourselves. Like, what do you mean I'm not making? Of course I'm in control.
Yeah.
That's why I made this decision was this, this, and this reason. No, no, no. That's
mm-hmm.
why that's how you're justifying after the fact, but that's not
mm-hmm.
why you made it. Because if you think of, like, let's say in the conflict situation.
Mm-hmm.
After the fact, can you think of there was something that I could have done different? There was something that I could have done better.
Mm-hmm.
I could have avoided
mm-hmm.
this entire argument if I just done this.
Yeah.
You can.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have also done that before the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you?
Yeah.
Because you weren't consciously thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You were not in control. You're in control
yeah.
now after the fact when you're looking back on it, but now it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's almost like we are, you know, justifying our actions rather than actually taking, as you said, like conscious decisions, right? So
yeah.
when you speak to a lot of people, right, who are going through issues, like what do you see, like because you said, you know, we don't understand ourselves, right? So do you meet a lot of people who undervalue themselves or overvalue themselves?
I have never met someone who truly, genuinely overvalues themselves. I've met a lot of people who appear to, but that is coming because they are very much in the fear of not having value. Cockiness, you know, hubris, arrogance, etc. That's a mechanism of insecurity, not of excess confidence, as we tend to refer to it. And then what tends to happen is, yes, almost everyone ever that I've ever spoken to or met in some capacity has insecurities. That's part of the human condition. The awareness that we have over the insecurities that we have is very much correlated with how confident we actually are. The people who are not aware at all, they will be the cocky ones. They will be the people who appear to overvalue themselves because they are so unaware of the things that they are afraid of, the things that they are insecure about, that they just pretend they don't have them. They don't realize that all of this behavior, this posturing, is them being really, really scared of being seen as weak. So they want to show that, no, I'm really strong, I'm really in control. It's like, you just look constipated, not in control. But the being able to tap into what our insecurities really are, and like what's driving us, what our fears are, what the deeper emotions are, just being able to do that, to bridge that gap, allows us to go, oh, so if this is what I'm really feeling, then this is what I need. And we won't be able to correct our behavior, for instance, until we do that. Because if you're like, oh no, I'm perfect, I never make a mistake, my communication, I'm a great communicator. Like, I told my wife how I felt, and she didn't even respond. It's like, it's her fault, kind of. Well, but here's the thing. You are overestimating your competence because you are ignoring your insecurities, your fears, your traumas, your et cetera, that are guiding you. For one, you are really scared to admit that you have something that you are incompetent at. I think of myself as a really smart guy. I don't know the first thing about like rocket engineering. I am very fine admitting
that. Me too, Andrew. Me too, yeah.
So
I don't know shit. I just see a stick flying.
It's just a stick with fire and it just goes up for a reason. I tried doing that in my living room. It didn't work.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know anything about that. And I'm very cool with admitting that because for one, this opens me up to there's something I can learn. If I want to look into, if I wanted to launch my own spaceship and then park it somewhere, then I could study that because I have the humility to understand that this is something that I'm lacking.
Yeah.
If I don't do that, if I say, oh, I know everything about, like, do you really? That's a very dangerous thing to say. I never want to say about anything that I know everything about anything or that I'm good at anything because that locks your brain out of learning new, exciting potential things that you could be missing.
Yep.
So
I think it's, again, the same, like, philosophical, you know, question, right? Like, how, if you think you're truly smart, right, and how do you recognize it? Right, like that's like a classic, you know, I would say challenge that every philosopher comes across.
Yeah.
Because, you know, most philosophers tend to think I am perfect, like I am better than. I think they have this exceptionalist mindset where they're like, you know, I'm better than everybody. I think that's what you're trying to get at in terms of communication or just, you know, thinking that, okay, I am good at something.
Yeah.
Right. But as you said, if you are good at communicating, why is your partner talking to you?
Yeah.
Right.
It's so easy to justify it as, oh, because my partner. Like, oh, my husband, he's so stoic. He's never cried in his life, not even once. He has no feelings. He just bottles everything up, etc. Like, I hear this all the time. Every woman appears to be married to the same guy. But I will have a conversation with that same guy. And within 5 minutes, he's crying. He's telling me about his whole, like, life trauma. Why?
Yeah.
Like, is it that, you know, the planets aligned and circumstances changed for him and suddenly he's no longer that person or just for these 5 minutes that he's talking to me? Or is there something different in my approach when I'm interacting with him that is very different from the way that the wife is interacting with him.
Most so do you think it's because, sorry to disturb you, right? Do you think it's because you are operating from a point of no expectations?
No expectations and no judgment. I think that's the biggest one. One of the biggest killers of connection is judgment. It's criticism. It's like, if you feel like you need to prove yourself to me, you're not going to show me who you genuinely are. You're going to show me who you want me to perceive you as.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really dangerous thing to bring into a relationship. If I ever make you feel that there is a specific standard that you need to hold yourself up to, you are no longer going to be able to trust me to open yourself up genuinely, vulnerably, ever.
Yeah.
I've just killed connection. I want you to open up. Like, you should open up to me. You should talk about how you feel. And also, you need to be good enough for me, and you need to be strong, and you need to be masculine. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to,
which
like,
one do
make
you
a
want?
Decision.
Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you would say that a lot of people do undervalue themselves, right, in relationships?
Undervalue, for sure, yes.
In terms of what they bring and what they're capable of.
Yes.
Right. So keeping that in mind, right, like what is your suggestion or tips, right, just guidelines, since you are the fire department of relationships, right, what's your kind of precautions or I would say just as, you know, a general suggestions? That you could probably help somebody with that. Like, hopefully never talking to you, right?
First and foremost, and this is the most uncomfortable of these steps, is to get really, really, like, raw and honest with yourself. Go over exchanges that you've had, like text message exchanges that you've had, from months or years ago, like a time in which you don't even remember the emotional state that you were in at that time, so that you're reading it as, these are two people, not me, not my spouse, these are like two other people. Distance yourself, third person perspective to this, and like read through those messages, especially if it's like, if it was an argument or something that is more contentious, read through that and point out what each person is doing wrong. Like, go over it to criticize both people. Again, none of these people is you, so you're safe, you're fine, don't worry about it. But just point out, like, oh, this person really screwed the pooch here. This person is being really proud here. This was really poorly communicated. This came across in this particular way. And just being able to observe our own patterns from a very unbiased, non-defensive kind of stance, that we really understand, oh, this is how I'm showing up. We get way too caught up in the whole, like, but my spouse is doing this, but what did you do before that? Because there's a domino effect both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that would be the first thing, is like, get really, really raw about your self-awareness of like, what are you doing and how are you communicating? What is showing up? How are you coming across to your spouse? Oftentimes, you are not going to be able to do that yourself. You are too biased. Ask friends. Ask a lot of different friends, not just the same friend, and not a specific group of friends. And if they're too close to you, they're not good friends for this.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Ask
so you need somebody
brother,
who's
someone
like,
who slightly hates you as well.
Yeah, so probably somebody who's unbiased.
As close to as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I did this, like we had this conversation, and I did this, like, what did I do wrong? Specifically ask that. Because if you're just asking, like, what do you think? That's way too generic. I mean, that sucks. I'm just going to want to validate you instead of like, you did this wrong. Because that's uncomfortable as well. So like, give them permission to criticize you. Like, what do you think I did wrong in this? And be receptive to feedback. Whatever they say, agree.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you disagree, agree.
Yeah.
Because you want to take in as much feedback as possible. And then if you want to vet it later, you can. But you want to practice the receptivity. So that's the first thing, is scrutinize yourself to no end. Be as vicious a critic to yourself as you can be. This is going to be really, really useful when you then want to communicate better properly with your spouse. Is you will want to do pretty much the opposites of all the things that you've been doing wrong, which is why it's so important that we need to understand what those are. And we need to understand what is it exactly that our spouse is feeling when we are doing these things, when we're making these behaviors. So a really good exercise for this, you can imagine, do this not while you're driving, but you can close your eyes and imagine a situation in which you fought with your spouse, an argument. And
that was a good warning, though.
Don't drive while doing this. We actually have this as a running joke with our clients that we have a no dying policy. So if we have anyone driving while on a coaching call or anything, we will have them pull up, because if we need them to close their eyes for something, I don't want to be responsible for any crashes. So same rules apply here. Park your car first and then close your eyes and imagine an argument. And what you're going to do is, you are, by instinct, you are going to typically want to imagine things from your point of view or from a third-person perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do is we want to imagine everything from their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So like you are in their body. So you would be looking at you. You'd be looking at your body language. You'd be hearing your voice and your tonality.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be seeing like what you are wearing, what you were. You could hear what you were saying. You could see your facial expression, what gestures you were using. You could see like, where were you? What was behind you? So like being able to recreate in as much detail as possible, the environment in which this argument happened, but perceived as though you are your spouse. And what this is doing is, this is training your body. This is training your neurology, your brain, to receive the data that you were putting across, and then your brain will automatically output, man, this is kind of like how this would feel. And so in practicing this as an exercise, you get better and better at being able to anticipate how your spouse is going to feel when you do something, when you say something, because you're training your brain to think like your spouse, to be literally as specifically as possible in your spouse's shoes. So then you're going to take, what was the stuff that you were doing wrong? What were the emotions that this stuff was causing in your spouse? And then you're going to, third step, you're going to put that together, and you're going to pretty much like do the opposites of the things that you were doing to have a very different response. So to put this into an example, let's say something that I may tend to do is I may, this is a kind of a silly example, but it's for an example's sake. I may like shake my fist when I'm talking, like I'm really vehement about something. It's like, ah, oh, man, this thing, I really want this to work between us. Like this, now, obviously, this is a dumb thing to do, but it could be a habit. Now, automatically, the feedback that I'm going to get from my friends is going to be, well, sometimes you can come across a little bit strong. I do? Yeah, you know, you, when you do the whole fist thing, it kind of looks like you're about to punch me. It's like, oh, interesting. I need to watch out for that. Let me step into my spouse's shoes in an argument when I was doing that. And oh, yeah, now I can see it. I can feel that. I can understand much more intuitively how this is going to be received, how this is going to be perceived. I am going to, in my spouse's skin, I am going to feel fear. I am going to feel, you know, there's uncertainty, there's volatility in the situation. So what do I need to do instead? I need to create opposite feelings. So what are things that I can do that are going to make them feel safe, that are going to make them feel comforted? Well, okay, instead of the fist shaking thing, let me, you know, do more like open palms, like kind of like a preacher, you know, when they do the whole like arms stretch, and like, let me speak more like that. Show my palms more, stretch them out, open my body up. Now, how is that going to be received? This is very, very different, because this is creating the comfort, the safety. So this is being able to refine how I'm coming across. A little bit more poignant example. Something that we hear very often is, like, the spouse feels that you are manipulative, that you are controlling. And you're like, but why? I don't understand. What am I doing that is controlling, that is manipulative? Well, for one, they said, I want a divorce. And you said, over my dead body, I'm going to fight for you. I will get you back. I understand your position. You're like, I love you. I love our family. I am going to fight to protect our family. And this is what's going to be best for all of us. Like, that's where you're coming from. Where are they coming from? They're coming from, this is not working. I don't feel happy here. And this has been a really hard decision, but I've made it that I think it's going to be the best thing for all of us if we end this relationship here. No, I'm not letting you. Yeah, that does come across as controlling.
Yep.
But we won't be able to perceive that until we're able to step into their shoes. So, okay, what was it that we were doing in the communication that was coming across that way? Well, for instance, did we have our like our arms crossed in front of us? Did we have tension in our faces? Were we like grinding our jaw? What was our like eye stare like? If we were just insistent, and did they want to leave the room and then we follow them into the room after them? Like all of these things, this is behaviors that you absolutely want to be aware of, because this is going to come across. It's not going to put you in a very good light. So, okay, I understand the behaviors that I was doing wrong. I understand the emotions that my spouse was feeling. What are the emotions, the opposite, that I want them to feel? I want them to feel like they can trust me. What would I need to do, like physically, what would I need to do in the conversation to have that opposite response? For one, I would be a lot more agreeable, a lot more permissive, sure. Not in the sense of, okay, here's a divorce, but I would be more relaxed in the sense of like, I did not anticipate this at all. I mean, it makes sense that you're feeling this way. I'm just curious, like, what was it that led you to this decision? What was this, this, and this? Or you already know. I probably should, and I'm kind of ashamed that I didn't realize this was that serious. What would you say was like the driving factor that makes this like the only option for you? So like everything that you phrase, there's this tone of like, there's a little bit of insecurity in the way that I, you know, we talk about like, oh, you need to be confident. Like, that's not always the right tool. But there's this air of like, there's genuineness, there's vulnerability, there's openness, there's, I'm receptive to what you're bringing.
Yeah.
It's not, okay, let's sign the divorce papers, but no, I'm receptive. Like, I want to receive this, and I want to be able to talk about this in a way that receives it, not in a way that chastises it, because the way most people will do that is, oh, no, we need to sit down and talk about this. Like, we can make this work. So, yeah. Chastise yourself, like criticize yourself, be very, very, be a very harsh critic, understand your spouse better, put yourself in their shoes to understand how they are receiving stuff, what their emotional experiences are, and then do the opposite. Just, even if you don't know specifically what to do, just aim for as opposite to what you were doing, see what kind of results you get, and then iterate from there.
God. And here's my final question, right? Like, when there is about to be conflict, right? How much does just shutting the fuck up help? Instead of just like, you know, blurping out whatever the person wants to blurp out in that moment.
A lot. And it's, even if you want to respond, I will always suggest, and this is something that I will, that we teach our clients, is we always strongly suggest that your very first response is nothing at all.
Just
pause first for a number of reasons. One, you want them to feel heard, so you want them to feel like they have the chance to talk. That's number one. Two, we just talked about earlier about your limbic system has no place in this conversation. If you respond too soon, it's coming from your limbic system. So shut up. Let that wave pass. Let the limbic system go, is this for me? No, okay, I'll wait for the next one. Like, let your limbic system go back to sleep. Think things through more rationally about like what is objectively happening. Do this process in your head if you need to, like step into like what are they feeling right now, like what are they going through, so that you understand what the actual cause of the conflict is, because it's not what they're saying. And in like being able to like think things through, being able to be more objective, you also get a lot better responses. you're able to go through the whole the process of like, okay, so what is going to, this is the state that they're in, what is the opposite state, what do I need to do different, how can I deliver on that? So being able to get really honed into what I need to do rather than what I feel like doing.
Yeah.
Because what you feel like doing is almost always the wrong thing to do. Just assume that.
Yep. Yep. I agree. I think like you have provided more value in terms of just helping, right? Just helping people just be better in the relationships, right? You know, throughout your career and even on the podcast. And it's almost like since you have studied this for a long time, right? Like, I think every time a new case comes in, you can probably predict what's wrong from the get-go, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting. Sorry, just a little bit of an aside there, because we had this, I have a newsletter that I send out. And some time ago, the newsletter that I sent out, it was something like, we deal with all sorts of like really messy, complicated situations. Everyone that we talk to is convinced that this is the worst case that has ever existed, that their case is the one that is completely unsolvable. And so I dared people to like, okay, so just write us back. If you think that you have an unsolvable problem, mm-hmm. write back to me. Tell me what your situation is. Tell me why you think your particular situation is impossible to solve. And if that is something that is not currently in our program, then we will add it to the program. And we had so many responses. It was like record-breaking for our numbers. We usually get a lot of responses anyway. But that was the most that we've ever had by a lot. Mm-hmm. And what was funny was everyone was saying like, oh, you see, my situation is so unique because of this. Mm-hmm. And we could categorize the kinds of unique situations that there was no one else like it. We could categorize these and we could like slot these. So we had like 3,000 yeah. people saying that my spouse is the most stubborn person in the world. Mm-hmm. Are all 3,000 of you married to the same person?
Hopefully not.
Because people always feel like their situation is so unique and so special and so everything because it's the one that they're living. And I kind of think of it like a hospital situation. Mm-hmm. You know, if suddenly you feel like there's a weird bump growing on your shoulder, you get really freaked out. Oh my God, this is terrible. To you, this is the worst thing that's ever happened.
Yeah.
You don't know what to do. You don't know what this means. You don't know what could happen. It's scary. Mm-hmm. You go to the hospital. They're like, oh yeah, let me just do this thing. And then I'll come right there and I'll just, with a syringe, I'll just draw the fluid out. You'll be good to go. They've seen this. You don't.
A million times.
Like in your day-to-day, you don't see this. It's not normal for you. But in the context of a hospital, this is very normal.
Yep. Yep. Thank you so much, Andre, for being here, first of all. Helping us understand relationships and how weird it is, right? And how easy is it to navigate, right? If you just operate from a third person's perspective, right? So if people want to get a hold of you, where can they do that?
Yeah, my biggest, strongest recommendation, if you go on our website, and that's www.saveyourmarriagealone.com, you can get a free copy of my book. You can get access to, you can subscribe to our newsletter for daily updates and tips. And you can join our Facebook community through there as well.
Got it. And any final words to our audience, to my people?
Be humble. This is not something that we are taught. This is not something that we train in. And we all assume that we are better at it than we really are. Just be really, really humble. Look at everything that you do with like a degree of criticism. You are not above reproach. Nothing that you do is. And in everything that we tend to go like, oh, marriage, it takes two to tango. You know, it's always two people. But we usually say that when it's like, it's also the other person's fault. We never really think of that as like, it's also our fault.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Got it. So thank you so much for making that sound simple, right? I'm pretty sure it's very hard to bring that into practice, right? And yeah, to my audience, guys, this is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for being here. All of Andre's links will be in the episode description, so please go check him out. And hopefully you don't go to him when your house is literally on fire, right? Just talk to him before that and make sure you have some fire suppression system within your house. And yeah, thank you so much, Andre, for being here. And until next episode, thank you so much. Take care. Love you all.